Hello, Rock and Roll Rebels, and welcome to another episode of Ramble On with Rosie. As I do from time to time, we are branching off into a divergence of nerddom, much like I did with my Lord of the Strings episode discussing Lord of the Rings in relation to music, specifically music inspired by Tolkien's work. We're kind of doing it flip ways and discussing the soundtracks of 22 films. May seem strange why I picked 22 until I tell you it is Iron Man through Endgame. So the core 22 MCU films of the Thanos arc. The first one to, you know, the last one. I actually haven't seen any Marvel films since Endgame. I feel bad, but I have such closure after Endgame. I don't know if I want to go mess with that by going and seeing anything new. Doctor Strange might get me to go to the movie theater, honestly. As could the new Thor movie that's coming out too. But back from movies to music and discussing the music in those movies, the MCU, as those of you who have watched the films know, has everybody from AC/DC to Zeppelin. So they really do have the corner on the classic rock soundtrack, you know, market. And for the people who try to argue that it's the Guardians of the Galaxy franchise, part of the franchise that introduced classic rock to the fandom and the films, need I remind you that the very first film, Iron Man, literally opens with one of the most iconic classic rock songs ever. Certainly one of the most iconic opening, riffs or whatever you want to call it. That being Back in Black, of course, where Tony Stark is driving through the Middle East and, you know, the Humvee gets blown up and all that, and Back in Black is playing at the beginning, so it's, like, very much, like, been there since the beginning. Very first film, very first scene, classic rock has been an integral part of the MCU. And it's not just Iron Man 1, but it's also Iron Man 2, which, honestly, as the films go, is one of the weaker ones. I hate to say it, but its soundtrack is amazing. It's like I was talking to my friend the other day. I was like, the film is a dumpster fire, but the soundtrack is absolute fire. Because it also opens with another classic rock song by AC/DC, with Shoot to Thrill, which gets associated with Tony Stark's character in future films as well. But in Iron Man 2, you've got that. You've also got probably the most iconic scene in the whole film, which is Tony Stark and his best friend Rhodey hammering each other in their respective suits of the War Machine and Iron Man suits, while another one bites the dust while Queen plays. I mean, you get more iconic than clobbering your bestie to Queen? Seems like a pretty solid, you know, way to go. But that's not it. While that may be the most iconic two songs from Iron Man 2, there's some high quality background songs. For one, Iron Man 2 boasts two Clash songs. Should I Say or Should I Go is playing in the background while Tony is tinkering on his suit and stuff. And then more importantly, Magnificent Seven, which is also more important because it's less well known than Should I Stay or Should I Go Now. But Mag 7 is playing when we first meet the deadly redhead, Natasha Romanoff, under an alias, albeit. She makes her debut while Mag 7 is playing in the background. So, I mean, of songs to make a debut to, can't say no to that funky bass line in Magnificent 7. So, I mean, I'd pick that for an intro song any day. And as I mentioned, Shoot to Thrill gets associated with Tony Stark's character a decent amount, to the point that in the first Avengers film, not to be confused with Captain America, the First Avenger, which is Captain America's first film, but in the first Avengers film that came out in 2012, Tony arrives in Stuttgart, I had to remember what city it was, by hijacking over the intercom in the jet, playing Shoot the Thrill, and then making a snarky Stark comment to Natasha before subduing Loki and calling him reindeer games, and coming to Captain America's aid. So it's a pretty iconic use of Shoot to Thrill there, even possibly more so than the opening to Iron Man 2, either that or I'm just prejudiced against Iron Man 2. But speaking of the Star Spangled Man, whose aide Tony came to while Shoot to Thrill played, he doesn't have a lot of classic rock credentials in his films, which makes sense because he's, you know, from the 40s, not the 70s. But he does get to claim a pretty iconic scene, it's not really classic rock, but classic soul song, as in you get Marvin Gaye's Trouble Man playing near the end of the film, while Steve Rogers is recuperating in the hospital. This being significant because at the beginning of the film, when Steve Rogers and Sam Wilson, also known as Falcon, first meet each other, this is one of the things that, I think it's the only thing, actually, that Sam Wilson recommends to him, you know, because he's talking about how he's trying to catch up with the 21st century after being a popsicle for 70 years, and Sam Wilson is like, you know, Marvin Gaye, Trouble Man soundtrack, we'll catch you up on everything you missed. And at the end of the film, Sam Wilson's phone is seen playing Trouble Man from the Trouble Man soundtrack, and then, of course, Steve wakes up from being unconscious and is like, on your left. Which is a sassy reference to the beginning of the film as well. But what makes this song so iconic, aside from the fact that it is literally mentioned in the film, is that right at the fade out of Marvin Gaye's voice, where he's doing this plaintive moving on down the line, it cuts to Samuel L. Jackson's character about to set fire to his life's work. And there's just something about the way they timed that fade out with the opening on the scene of Nick Fury. It just really hits a certain kind of way and was very well placed, very well done. So while Captain America doesn't get a lot of classic rock or, you know, classic music of the 60s, 70s, 80s type stuff, the one song that's in his films that was used that way is pretty iconic, to me at least. I really appreciated that use of the Marvin Gaye song. But he does have another song that's not quite classic rock, so it has another... It's not old enough to be classic rock, but it is rock. Even though it's not with his character in the scene in Captain America Civil War, we first get introduced to the... scrappy little teenager from Queens known as Peter Parker to a song called Left Hand Free by Alt-J. And it, to me, that's one of the, probably the only iconic song usage in Civil War. Like I said, Captain America's films don't get a lot of major songs that, like, really move you. I mean, unless you want to talk about Peggy Carter's funeral, but, you know, it's certainly not, like, songs with lyrics. So much, like, they're more instrumental or, like, really classic big band, like, very old songs. But for the introduction of the new young buck character, Peter Parker, you get a new young rock and roll song with Left Hand Free by Alt-J, which is really good. I liked it. It was, you know, a fun way to meet Peter. He was just a fun character, and nostalgia nerd that Peter Parker is, he gets some classic rock songs filtered into his films as well, most prominently and most appropriately being the definitive New York band who put Queens on the map and typify adolescence almost as much as Peter Parker himself, the Ramones! Wherein Peter Parker, or rather Spider-Man's first film, Spider-Man Homecoming, Blitzkrieg Bop is used perfectly as Peter Parker is experimenting in his new Tony Stark designed superhero suit, which is pretty great. It's a fun scene. I enjoy it. I mean, not to complain, because it's great, but the Ramones did more songs than just Blitzkrieg Bop and I Want to Be Sedated, and this should be recognized more often. Because I feel like those are the only ones that get used. So, that's my only beef. But Blitzkrieg Bop was a great pick for the Spider-Man Homecoming scene. It's not the only classic rock he gets, though. You get a song by Traffic. and Canned Heat's going up to country when he's going on a school road trip. What do they call it? I can't even. The field trip. There we go. To Washington, D.C. Traffic will make another appearance later in the final film of the 22 that we're discussing, but we'll get to that. As other heroes go, Ant-Man has a couple of cool song choices. Not particularly classic rock, but they are older. You've got Dusty Springfield's version of Spooky, while him and Hope have a long chat about serious matters in the miniaturized car while being then attacked by pigeons. And then Come On Get Happy while he's sort of locked down under house arrest. Sort of like how we all felt for the last 2 years, right? You know, but before we were, Scott Lang was. So he gets the Partridge Family and Dusty Springfield. So not real pop bubblegum, which sort of fits with his character, his general upbeat mannerisms. You also get Doctor Strange making a reference to Bob Seger's Kathmandu in his film, but more specifically, his occupation is literally introduced to us while he's listening to Shining Star by Earth, Wind, and Fire while doing surgery. I mean, I don't know whether I would be comfortable or uncomfortable with my surgeon listening to classic rock, just so long as they don't get too vigorous with their movements and headbang and, like, cut the wrong thing off. It'd be somewhat leery, but the patient's unconscious, so they don't have to worry about that. Obviously, Thor probably has the most iconic classic rock song usage in his film. Like, even more than all the Guardians of the Galaxy films, which we will get to, because there's so much to unpack there. But Thor literally has Robert Plant wailing about Vikings as he, you know, hits people with his hammer and strikes them down with lightning and just knocks everybody over, and it's literally, like, exuding lightning bolts. It's probably one of the most badass scenes in cinematic history. Made definitely more so by the use of Immigrant Song by Led Zeppelin. I mean, there's just something about Robert Plant wailing like a insane Viking banshee that just brings a next level to wherever that song is used, which is not often because, of course, Led Zeppelin is super stingy with their rights. So, small divergence here. The backstory to how they got Immigrant Song, because I feel like it needs to be explained when you get, you know, one of those Holy Grail songs from a band that never gives out the rights to their songs. They didn't have to do a pleading video like Jack Black did for School of Rock, but what happened is that for, like, the test, you know, like the sketchboard of the film or whatever, Taika Waititi, the director, had used Immigrant Song as, like, the backdrop song, and the people at Marvel were like, oh yeah, this is great, we'll use this song. And meanwhile, Taika's looking at them like, you don't just get Led Zeppelin songs. So they're like, but we have to have the song. And he's like, you're absolutely right, we do, but I don't know that we can get it. So they're like, well, you know more about this than we do, what should we do? And so basically Taika told them, don't try to haggle or bargain, just, like, offer as much money as you're willing to pay for the rights to the songs immediately up front. Apparently that was enough to induce Led Zeppelin to loosen up and give them the rights to use the song in Thor Ragnarok. I want to make a small note here that until I read that backstory, I had this delightful mental image of, like, Jimmy Page sitting down with a cup of tea calmly in his library in one of his, you know, stately manners, and then Robert Plant literally bursting through the door unannounced, going, it's about Vikings! We have to let them have it! Because being the big, you know, Nordic folklore fanboy that Robert Plant is, I could just see him enthusiastically, like, going, we have to give them this song, while the slightly more dignified Page considers it. That was my fun mental image, which I kind of prefer to, you know, business deals and finances and haggling over money. I'm like, no, I like Robert Plant bursting in, preferably with, like, one of the horned Viking helmets on, insisting that Page give them, you know, relinquish the rights to let them use Immigrant Song. That's my fun mental image for that. But that's not the only iconic Thor song there is. In the first Thor film, Billy Swan's "I Can Help" is used quite iconically as the locals are trying to move Mjolnir, the magical hammer that gives Thor his power, out of the crater that it formed when it fell from the sky, basically. It's also iconic because Stan Lee is in that scene, trying to drive a truck and then loses the back half of his truck, trying to pull Mjolnir out of the pit. So that's the other iconic Thor song. Couldn't really think of anything iconic from Dark World. Dark World is kind of down there with Iron Man 2 for not and Iron Man 3 for being on the weaker side of Marvel films. Because it's just, it's not nothing that great happens in it other than you do get sassy banter between Loki and Thor, which made it worthwhile for me. Very, very sibling vibes there. But oh, and in the first Thor film, you also get a Foo Fighters song playing in the background while Selvig and Thor have some drinks. I think it's also in the closing credits. And you just can't go wrong with a band with Dave Grohl in it, as Captain Marvel knows. Because her movie is probably second only to the Guardians of the Galaxy films for having just the best, most chock-full kind of soundtrack of, like, classic songs. Especially iconically 90s classic songs. I mean, from her face-off with the Supreme Intelligence, being set to Nirvana's Come As You Are, so Dave Grohl band number two, or rather number one, because he was in it before the Foo Fighters. Which, incidentally, Come As You Are, very has uncannily accurate lyrics for what's going on in the scene. Like, they're really fine-tuned. Which is sort of the opposite of the Guardians of the Galaxy. Guardians of the Galaxy specialize in anachronistic use of songs. But Captain Marvel's film has some very accurate songs, not just with Come As You Are, but also with No Doubt's girl power ballad, I'm Just a Girl, playing while Carol Danvers completely wrecks shop on her former allies over the Tesseract. It's a great scene. One of my favorites. And I also have always loved I'm Just a Girl by No Doubt. Like, I used to watch it, the music video, on MTV with my brother when I was like 8 or younger. I was younger than 8. And always identified it because as a little girl, especially with a brother 5 years older than me, I always felt like the boys were being allowed to do way more than I could, and I felt it was unfair. But that's beside the point. I'm just very nostalgically attached to I'm Just a Girl, so having my favorite female superhero have it in her film in such an iconic scene, where it's like dominating the audio, even where it's just pretty much mainly the song you hear playing. Really, I was like, yes, iconic childhood song, iconic hero, this is all a win. But that's not where Captain Marvel's song references end. From her Nine Inch Nails t-shirt that she heists to the GNR tank top, GNR rather, Guns N' Roses tank top that she's wearing in the flashback scenes, it's like all 90s and it's all glorious. And you even have a super throwback with a cute little serenade over the kitchen sink by Samuel L. Jackson while his character Nick Fury does a version of the Marvelettes' Mr. Postman to Carol, who's amused, to say the least. And it really sort of is a sweet scene, because a lot of people accuse Brie Larson's portrayal of Carol being kind of cold, which it can seem that way until, like, you've watched it a couple times, but the scene at the kitchen sink over Mr. Postman is pretty, proves that that theory's kind of wrong. She has a warmth. It's just hidden down there, which is understandable given the circumstances she's went through in that film. But moving on from Captain Marvel to the big ones, the Guardians of the Galaxy, the masters of classic rock usage in song, in their films. Just, it's hard to even know where to begin with them. I mean, even when they're not in their own films, they have iconic songs, whether it's at the beginning of their introduction in Infinity War, when they're jamming to Rubber Band Man, or when Rocket Raccoon is going with the Hulk to sort of rouse Thor, who has let himself go a little bit, and the Kinks' Supersonic Ship is playing, which props to them for playing an obscure Kink song. Like, that's one of the things I appreciate about the Marvel soundtracks, especially with the Guardians of the Galaxies soundtracks, is they don't always pick like your big pop hits. Like, they pick some of them are, but some of them are more obscure songs that like maybe you only heard once or twice on the radio. They're not Back in Black by AC/DC or Come As You Are by Nirvana or the Blitzkrieg Bop even. Like, they're harder to find than that, which is I appreciate because I like discovering new music and new bands, and the Guardians of the Galaxy soundtracks are a really good mix of like well-known and less familiar. And like I said, so even if it's, you know, an Infinity War with Rubber Band Man or an Endgame where it is, you know, a Supersonic Ship with Rocket Raccoon, or the very opening scene, well, opening post-logo scene. So I'm not sure how you'd quantify that. The opening scene is Clint Barton losing his family after the snap. But the other opening scene after the Marvel logo plays is Dear Mr. Fantasy, which actually Dear Mr. Fantasy by Traffic starts playing during the logo and bleeds into Tony Stark being on Peter Quill's ship, which is incidentally named the Benatar after the. And honestly, I'm gonna make a side note here that Dear Mr. Fantasy, the way they used it in the film is another one of those ones that gives me chills, kind of like Trouble Man did in Winter Soldier. It just. There's something about Steve Winwood's vocals, which it was. Yet again, more obscure song. Not everybody knows Traffic. And I couldn't think of who had done it. I obviously knew it was Steve Winwood singing, but I was like, this isn't Blind Faith. This is not a Blind Faith song. Blind Faith only did one album, and I've listened to that album my whole life, and Dear Mr. Fantasy is not on it. But this sounds like Blind Faith. And so when I got home after, you know, having my heart ripped out of me watching Endgame, I had to go Google who had done Dear Mr. Fantasy, which is Traffic. So Traffic has two Marvel songs, or two songs in Marvel films. And like I said, this opens, you know, it's playing on the Benatar while Tony Stark and Nebula sort of slowly starve to death until Captain Marvel shows up. And from the Benatar to the first film where you've got, you know, the Runaways, that they cover the girl groups. I think they also have one or two others, B-52s. But there's some girl rockers too, which is nice. Like I said, yeah, obviously Captain Marvel had no doubt, but you know, not always do the girl rockers get attention, so it's nice that they did. Speaking of girls, we'll go to Volume 2's soundtrack before we jump back around because it's one thing when there's an iconic song for a scene and maybe two scenes, but Brandy by Looking Glass is like definitive to the whole second film, which is an impressive boast. Like, I just had to make a side note for that because that's pretty impressive. I can't think of any other film that uses Brandy. It's both explicitly mentioned in the film, it's used in a couple scenes in the film, it's used to explain the motives of characters in the film. Like, it's. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 could easily be subtitled Brandy or a Fine Girl. It's that central to the whole film, which it's not often that that happens in a movie, especially when it's not like an original song. It's not like this is a movie about some musicians and he's composing this song and then it's, you know, mentioned throughout. Like, I want to say Music and Lyrics with Drew Barrymore and Hugh Grant did something like that where they were working on the song throughout the film, kind of. It's been a while since I've watched that. But this isn't even like that. This is a completely well-known song, which incidentally was one of my favorite songs as a little girl. I always loved this song. As I've mentioned in previous episodes, I have a soft spot for bittersweet songs. And so Brandy is definitely a pretty bittersweet song. And for a while, I wanted to become a barmaid just because I liked the song so much. And then my dad was like, no, my 14-year-old daughter is not going to aspire to working at a bar. Raise your aspirations. And I'm like, I don't mean like a bad bar. I want a cute, fluffy blouse and to look like the Polly Girl, logo girl. I want to be that kind of barmaid, like barmaid of 200 years ago, not now. But anyways, so moving on with the rest of the Guardians of the Galaxy soundtrack. Nothing says space adventures like David Bowie, I'm sorry. And he gets featured in the soundtrack to the first film with, surprisingly, not your typical space oddity usage, which is usually what gets used when you're doing David Bowie, especially in space. They actually switched it up and they use his song Moon Age Daydream very well. When they first arrive on the planet, or rather, former planet, former celestial thing called Nowhere, spelled Know. But yeah, so Bowie gets to make an appearance as all good sci-fi films with classic rock should do. If you don't believe me, go watch The Martian. But yeah, so. Which The Martian also has, I think, a couple Bowie songs and not always just your space oddity, which is nice. Like I said, I like it when I get introduced to new music and new songs. And I also love it when an old favorite comes back, like Redbone's Come and Get Your Love, which literally introduces Peter Quill's character and endeared me to him forever after. Because I didn't watch the first Guardians film when it came out. I went and watched it because I wanted to see the second one, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is good. Because I was like, I don't care about these characters. They're nobody I know. They're not part of the main group. Why would I go see this film? And I was like, oh my gosh, I love them. Partly because being the classic rock nerd that I am and the person who loves to dance, I was like, if I was a man in space with less morals, I would totally be Peter Quill. Like, without question. Literally, like, my male space brother. It's just, doppelganger, whatever. Totally. I even cosplayed as Star-Lord once for Halloween. And after much cajoling, got the DJ to play Come and Get Your Love just so I could groove across the dance floor in true Star-Lord style, because this is what I do with my life. But yes, so Come and Get Your Love, of course, is super iconic to the Guardians, as is Blue Swede's Hooked on a Feeling, not just because it was used in the trailer, but because you literally get a kind of pun with the lyrics when the prison security guard punishes Peter Quill with electrocution while Hooked on a Feeling plays. So he's hooked and there's definitely a feeling, but not a pleasant one. While he's being electrocuted. And then you get the two songs of Pelvic Sorcery, to quote Gamora, which I love that whole sequence. The first being the one in which that line appears when Peter Quill is trying to teach Gamora how to slow dance, to Sam Cooke's Bring It On Home. Actually, it's funny because she doesn't even really familiar with music, so he's sort of introducing her to dancing and music at the same time while playing a classic soul song. Like, I am very partial to soul. It's how I survived, like, my first year of college or so was, other people may have been listening to Kesha and Pitbull. I was over here going, like, give me my Sam Cooke and my Smokey Robinson. So yes, I've always loved Bring It On Home to me, and I love to see it, show up in this film, 'cause highlight some old soul. Rather than just the straight typical classic rock. And then the other instance of pelvic sorcery featuring a soul song is Peter Quill's insane show of bravado when he challenges Ronan, the racial cleansing crazy dude, to a dance off to the Five Stair Steps' Ooh Child, which is just one, yet again, one of the most iconic scenes in Marvel. Like, it's in the top five of just iconic scenes, period, much less ones with or without music. I mean, who challenges completely crazy, genocidal, wackos to a dance-off for the fate of the galaxy. So, I adored it. Great, great. And that was a song that I'd heard a couple times, but had completely fallen out. You don't hear it on the radio a lot, or you certainly didn't before the film came out. And I was like, oh, I remember this song, but it's just been forever since I've heard it. So it was nice to be reintroduced to Child by the Five Stair Steps because of the first Guardians of the Galaxy film. Also, the first Guardians of the Galaxy film may have the cutest scene in the entire MCU in the post-credits. If you know, you know. Of course you do. It's Baby Groot dancing to the Jackson 5. I tried to say that together way too fast. But, and I mean, it's perfect because you've got Michael Jackson when he's young and is a baby kind of himself, and he's got that high voice, which perfectly fits the youthful, innocent enthusiasm that, you know, tiny little sprout Groot has when he's dancing in his flower pot and trying to avoid Drax seeing him dance. So, like, the Jackson 5's I Want You Back was a perfect choice for that scene where we get to see Baby Groot. It's also, you get the next scene in the MCU where you see Groot. Yet again, Baby Groot is stealing the show because the second Guardians of the Galaxy film literally opens the opening credits. There's a battle going on in which Baby Groot is completely oblivious to the battle and is just dancing around to Mr. Blue Sky by the Electric Light Orchestra. And it's great, obviously. It just sets the tone for the whole film. It's lovely. It's endearing. I love it so much. Much like Brandy, there's another iconic song that features throughout the second Guardians of the Galaxy film, though less conspicuously. It's not mentioned by characters like Brandy is. But The Chain by Fleetwood Mac makes an appearance at least twice during the film. And it's, you know, used really well. Like, I have to say it here, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 has probably the best unoriginal soundtrack. I mean, I say that as, like, a soundtrack made up of songs that aren't original to the film. Probably has the best, you know, unoriginal soundtrack since at least Rock and Roll High School, if not all the way back to American Graffiti. Like, it is up there. It's completely iconic. Like, every song was a perfect choice, even the, you know, the more obscure ones like Lakeshore Drive and stuff. All of it was just, or Wham Bam, Shang Lang, and Sha-La-La. I can't remember the exact name of that song. But anyways, it's playing during one of the battle sequences. Every song is right on the money in this movie. It's perfect. I adored it. I can't say enough. It's literally one of the best. And as things go, not just with Wham Bam and a Shang Lang A La song, that's not the only anachronistic song used. Like I was mentioning earlier, the Guardians of the Galaxy films kind of perfected, while also possibly originating, the use of very anachronistic songs during scenes. My favorite, both of the scenes that are iconic are my favorite. You've got Glenn Campbell's Southern Nights playing while Rocket Raccoon literally sonic blasts a whole forest full of bad guys repeatedly. I mean, it doesn't fit, but it fits because that's how the Guardians of the Galaxy films work. They somehow make those anachronistic song choices into completely iconic scenes. Southern Nights being one of those. A good old Glenn Campbell smoothly crooning while, you know, gruesome looking aliens are bounced up and down into trees. And then the scene, like maybe the most iconic scene in the whole Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 film, other than Peter Quill saying, "You shouldn't have killed my mom and squished my Walkman." Guys got his priorities straight. Mom and then music. So yeah, happy Mother's Day. Don't forget, it's in like a week. But anyways, the other scene that's super iconic with an anachronistic song choice is in which Yondu, the blue alien dude, literally takes out the entire crew that mutinied against him to the tune of Come a Little Bit Closer by Jay and the Americans, like, which is another song that I had heard as a child but hadn't heard in ages until it made a comeback on this soundtrack. So I was super happy about that. And then that scene is just so cotton picking iconic, as he's just decimating everybody with his, you know, magical flying arrow while Come a Little Bit Closer plays. It's just, it's a great moment. Especially because that coming onto the intercom sort of cues the mutineers onto realizing that the jig is up, vengeance is upon them. Because they know that that's Peter Quill's kind of taste in music, and that him and Yondu have teamed up. But anyways, the other iconic song usages are a little bit more in tune with the scene. In fact, they're very in tune. So, like, that's a great thing. The Guardians of the Galaxy films can go from being completely silly and nonsensical and anachronistic and just oddball but making it work to very, like, in tune with the scene. Like, their use of My Sweet Lord by George Harrison, really, really well done. It just fit the scene so well, because it's when Peter Quill's sort of first getting to spend time with his, you know, biological father, and, you know, is exploring the planet that his father built and things like that. So it's just really, you know, cool scene with the kind of happy, cheerful, magical vibes, which, you know, My Sweet Lord by George Harrison totally fits. And then on the flip side, you have the also even more appropriate use of Cat Stevens, or Yousef's, song Father and Son near the close of the film, when Peter Quill is recalling his, you know, his real dad, Yondu, who raised him, and, you know, listening to the earbud and giving the other one to Baby Groot, where it's almost like a generational thing where, not that Baby Groot's his kid, but, you know, they're all sort of fatherly towards the baby tree, so that, you know, sort of pulls it all in together and makes it really sweet. And of course, Cat Stevens has such a lovely voice that sort of perfectly fits the sort of somber bittersweetness of the scene. Yeah, so, and besides, you always kind of liked Yondu, and by the end of the second Guardians Galaxy film, you're like crying ugly tears that he's gone, especially after the iconic line of, "I'm Mary Poppins, y'all!" Yes, yeah, so that's been a trip through the MCU via iconic classic rock and pop songs, and I'll get back to more, you know, serious musical content next week, but I wanted to take a divergence over into one of my nerd niches, especially because the 3-year anniversary of Endgame's release was a couple days ago, and I was like, oh my gosh, it's been 3 years. Whew. But yeah, that was scary to find. I was like, has it been that long? And I was like, I guess it has. I do remember being very grateful during 2020 and 2021 that I had my Marvel closure, and that it was done for me, and I wasn't waiting breathlessly for the next film, and I had my, you know, sense of completion. Because if I had had to have, like, if Endgame had been scheduled to come out in April of 2020 instead of 2019, I think we all would have collectively, like, screamed and, like, just lost it, because everybody that I know, at least, was desperately waiting the release of that film. I mean, I was one of the people who crashed Fandango trying to buy tickets the minute that they came available. So, yeah. I'm glad it came out a year before 2020, because if we had to wait another year or two to see Endgame, we'd all died. I couldn't have spent that long waiting to find out what happened to Bucky Barnes after he went all ashy at the end of Infinity War. I'd have just, like, sat outside of Marvel's office mournfully, pleading for them to just tell me what happens. I gotta know. But yeah, so that was the little divergence into the MCU and its use of classic rock, and I'll be back next week with more musical factoids, as I always do. And until next week, be kind to each other, and rock on.